folks, welcome back to Indaba Africa. This is Chris once again. Hello, folks, and welcome back to Chris White Africa here on the Indaba Broadcasting Network. It's the 10th of May, 2021. It's a Monday. Just another manic Monday. Well, folks, like sands through the hourglass, these are the days of our lives. Welcome back once again to Indaba Africa News of the Day. That little nod to the days of our lives with MacDonald Carey. If you remember that opening, it lasted for like three or four decades, something like that, or two decades, something like that. 4 days of our lives, like sands through the hourglass. These are the days of our lives. Well, welcome back to Indaba African News of the Day, the 10th of May, 2021. Let's get straight to the headlines, ladies and gentlemen. Begging once again, holding out his soup bowl. Please, sir, more soup. South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa, warns of vaccine apartheid. This would be the same South Africa that refused to participate in any activity in developing said vaccine. The African National Congress's Jesse Duterte holds the fort for the African National Congress in the Ace Magashule affair. The Deputy Secretary General is apparently holding the battlements, keeping back Magashule's faction. Ace's suspension cannot paper over the rot within the African National Congress. Ace Magashule supporters complain about manipulation in his absence during the National Working Committee's decision to suspend him on May 3rd. And further afield in Japan, polls show that 60% of Japanese who've been asked the question would like to see the Olympic Games canceled. I guess we're very fortunate the Rugby World Cup 2019 took place before the hysteria began. Ransomware shuts down the United States' pipeline, providing fuel to the East Coast. 45% of all the United States' eastern seaboard fuel comes through the Colonial Pipeline, which has been a victim of ransomware demands. Investigation currently underway by U.S. authorities into this criminal activity. The misuse of state funds intended for free electricity for poor South Africans in 2019-2020 fiscal year alone resulted in 9 billion rand in misappropriations of money intended to provide free electricity for poor South Africans, the overwhelming majority of whom are black, of course. Yet more ANC misuse of state funds. And 4 years after her last loss in the presidential election, the right-leaning candidate Marine Le Pen, her party, the Rassemblement National, according to a poll of French voters, 42% say that the Rassemblement National represents a threat to democracy. Perhaps I should ask the same question of Emmanuel Macron, who also represents a threat to democracy in France. Washington State's Governor Jay Inslee issued a mandatory training requirement for racist critical race theory for staff in schools in Washington State. A disabled veteran in Portland says that he was beaten by Burn Loop murder thugs in the streets. And we have a workforce crisis. This according to Pennsylvania Representative Dawn Kiefer, talking about the fact that government subsidized welfare, well, unemployment, COVID relief, is keeping people from going back to the workforce, forcing businesses to shut down. And I see it all around me. Representative Kiefer is my representative, and she speaks correctly about this phenomenon. We'll have a video of her testimony at the Pennsylvania legislature here shortly. Cape Town squatters, shack dwellers, demand basic services for illegally occupying land during the pandemic. They demand services now that they've established an illegal informal community. South African musicians are detained at Walvis Bay in Namibia after presenting fake vaccination or COVID certificates. And the Kazangula Bridge is finally open for business. After decades of conversation and nearly 7 years of construction, the Kazangula Bridge linking Zambia to Botswana is finally open. Tensions between Berlin and Rabat are rising over the Western Sahara crisis or question. After the Trump administration recognized Morocco's claim to Western Sahara, Berlin remained in opposition. Of course, we know that the ehemaligen DDR communist sympathizer Angela Merkel would do anything she can to put a thorn in the side of her unpopular friend there, Donald Trump. So Berlin continues to antagonize Rabat over the question of Western Sahara. And those are the headlines, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get to the stories in depth with analysis and commentary as we move through today's events from around Africa and those places that influence and affect Africa directly. Ramaphosa warns of vaccine apartheid if rich nations hoard shots. Once again, holding his hand out like the beggar that he is, the billionaire beggar. He's called on South Africans to support a waiver for some intellectual property rights for vaccines and medicines at the World Trade Organization. Ramaphosa said money that if wealthy nations hogged COVID-19 shots while millions in poor countries died waiting for them, it would amount to vaccine apartheid. South Africa and India have been pushing for a waiver on some intellectual property rights for vaccines and medicines at the World Trade Organization. Biden said he backed the proposal, but it'll take months to reach a deal. Well, my question is this. Where was South Africa when Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, Moderna began a rapid program to develop vaccines in this pandemic? Where was the South Africa pharmaceutical industry? Where was the South African Ministry of Health? They were absent, not participating, not making any offers, not offering anyone available for testing. While we heard intellectual black nationalist racists across Africa scream and whine a year ago about, they're experimenting on blacks, they're racist. When in fact, the experimentation was happening with Americans, overwhelmingly white Americans who were the guinea pigs for the vaccines during the trials under Operation Warp Speed, the lies spread by racists once again. And now we're seeing more nonsense from the president of South Africa who sat on the sidelines. Why is it that India, which strangely is also asking for these intellectual property rights to be removed, India is manufacturing the vaccine under license, effectively. And apparently, they've done it at a profit. Unfortunately for India, they shipped much of the vaccine around the world before they were hit like a tsunami with cases coming out of the woodwork. And so now India has a severe crisis. Ironically, one of the largest manufacturers of the vaccine around the planet were the Indian companies that were shipping it. So why is it that South Africa's Aspen Pharmaceutical, a generic drug manufacturer, is not producing the vaccination yet under license? It can be produced under license. The Chinese are doing it. The Indians are doing it. Why aren't South Africans? No, instead of telling the truth about his abysmal country and his ineffective malfeasance that is posing as governance, Cyril Ramaphosa will go hat in hand and play the racist card yet again, as he and his party are well accustomed to doing every time their failures are exposed. The reality is South Africa has the capacity to manufacture vaccine on their own under license, but they're too cheap to do it. And on to the Ace Magashule story, folks. This one just never ends. It's the gift that keeps giving for those watching the clown car show that is the African National Congress. South Africa's Duterte, who is the Deputy Secretary General for the ANC, will hold the fort as the Magashule madness continues. With the suspension of Secretary General Ace Magashule, President Cyril Ramaphosa and his allies are winning the fight to weaken their enemies in the South Africa's governing ANC. Magashule says he will appeal the decision, but the person filling his shoes is not going to make things easy for him. Well, he can appeal all he wants, and I disagree with the Africa Report. That's a very shallow analysis. Much better analysis from a gentleman named Oliver Dixon at the Business Times, who talks specifically about the reality that Magashule has never been a genuine threat to Ramaphosa. He's just one of many threats. Ramaphosa's support from David Mabuza is critical to him staying in office. And if he loses Mabuza's support, then he's done for. It's not the Magashule faction that determines Ramaphosa's fate. So the Zuma faction has a far larger role, but they don't have enough to unseat him either. And as I mentioned, Oliver Dixon says that Magashule's suspension is no victory for Ramaphosa. Deep in the crevices of the party lies a slew of political opponents ready to fill the Magashule lacuna, and so the tournament continues. Ramaphosa has gained control of the party, or the idea that he's gained control of the party and his future is a parochial wish rooted in nothing more than naively believing in the myth that there is a good ANC and a bad ANC, and that the good ANC has triumphed over the bad. There is, unfortunately, just one ANC, and for this reason, there is no renewal happening in ANC. Indeed. What was once a party with a majority of dedicated, patriotic, loyal South Africans who cared only for a multiracial, capitalist society rooted in democracy is now run by a cabal of gangsters who care nothing about a multiracial society, who care only about looting, pillaging, and thieving. And in fact, there is just one ANC. It's the rotten ANC. And that rotten ANC must be reformed internally by its own members because the political system doesn't allow for a reform of the ANC. That must be done inside the ANC. Will it happen? We shall see. One faction within the African National Congress, the Strategic Dialogue Group, is calling for the suspension of Ace Magashule because of his conduct. The story from Afikwe de Klerk in the Times Live says that they believe this, the SDG believes that Mr. Magashule's ill-judged and futile attempt to suspend President Ramaphosa constitutes a gross offense which necessitates the urgent intervention of the ANC's disciplinary committee. courting expulsion. No individual in the ANC has the power unilaterally to suspend another member, most especially if she or he holds a high position in the president. Suspension is devoid of constitutional validity. Indeed, it is. But it happens anyway, according to Ace Magashule. And Magashule's supporters, for their part, have claimed that the National Working Committee was manipulated into suspending Magashule. Now, never mind the fact that the ANC Constitution has a provision which requires that people indicted for criminal activity step aside or resign within 30 days of that. Magashule's been under indictment for ages. Only recently, with the ANC's popularity and its resources dwindling rapidly, did the party wake up and realize, oh gosh, people might care about corruption. Maybe we should do something, at least cosmetic. And so they told members indicted to step aside. Magashule arrogantly and cheekily refused. After 30 days, the National Working Committee met several days later, and they suspended him. And on the same day, he issued a letter of suspension to the president of the party, President Ramaphosa of South Africa. Unbelievable. But his supporters seem to think that he has been suspended through manipulation. Now, it's no manipulation. You violated the rules, Ace. You have violated the rules. Pretty clear and simple statement right there. So there you have it. In Japan, polls show that 60% of Japanese prefer to see the Olympic Games canceled. Now, remember, the Olympics were scheduled for 2020, and they were postponed to 2021 over concerns over the pandemic. Japanese apparently still cowering in their homes in Japan, concerned that the small number of athletes coming there, since they're not going to allow international spectators. Apparently, Japanese are terrified of the athletes bringing the disease, even though they'll be tested ahead of time. Nearly 6% of people in Japan want the Tokyo Games to be canceled. That's an opinion poll from today. Less than 3 months before the Games are due to begin. Survey conducted from May 7th to 9th by the Yomiuri Shimbun Daily showed 59% wanted the Games canceled as opposed to 39% who said they should be held. Postponement was not offered as an option. 23% of those who say it should go ahead say that they should take place without spectators. Foreign spectators were banned, but a final decision on domestic attendance will be made in June. And there you have it, folks. The Japanese don't want the Olympics. So we're going to see the Olympics canceled. Very real possibility that that may, in fact, actually happen. Here in the United States, a malware or ransomware effort to undermine a major oil pipeline, the Colonial Pipeline, which carries 45% of all kerosene or gasoline and diesel for the Eastern Seaboard. And already yesterday saw prices spiking at the pump, going up as much as a dime a gallon as a consequence of this, most likely, as this ransomware takes place. Operator of a major pipeline system transports fuel across the East Coast has Saturday been victimized by a ransomware attack and had halted all pipeline operations to deal with the threat. The attack is unlikely to affect gasoline supply and prices unless it leads to prolonged shutdown of the pipeline. Well, that's interesting that they say that, but I noticed a 10% increase in the price of gasoline when I drove up to New York, and when I came back hours later driving along the highway, I noticed the prices had changed. So perhaps the experts are wrong. We shall see. In this case, Colonial Pipeline said the ransomware attack Friday affected some of its information technology systems. The company was moving proactively to make certain systems offline, halting pipeline operations. In an earlier statement, it said it was taking steps to understand and resolve the issue with an eye toward returning to normal operations. The Georgia-based company transports gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, and home heating oil from refineries located in the Gulf Coast through pipelines running from Texas to New Jersey. Its pipeline system spans more than 5,500 miles, transporting more than 100 million gallons a day. The White House said President Biden was briefed Saturday morning. The federal government is working with the company to assess the implications of the attack, restore operations, and avoid disruptions in supply. As I mentioned previously, misappropriation of funds in the fiscal year 2019-2020 alone accounted for 9 billion rand of money intended to give free electricity to poor South Africans being misappropriated and no electricity going to these poor South Africans. Can you imagine if they actually had those electricity? Then Eskom would have probably collapsed even sooner if 9 billion more in demand had actually been put on them. Free basic electricity for the poor, billions in funding misappropriated by municipalities. Misappropriation of funds has occurred in the face of rapidly rising electricity prices from Eskom and much higher price of electricity supplied by municipal electricity suppliers, and serves to significantly increase levels of poverty in South Africa. A new research report from the Public Affairs Research Institute reveals that in the 2019-2020 financial year alone, about $9 billion budgeted and dispersed by the National Treasury to local governments for the provision of free basic electricity to the poorest of the poor has been misappropriated by municipalities. The situation continues unabated, is in fact worsening. The number of households receiving the free basic electricity benefit has generally declined over the past 5 years, while the number that is funded in the national budget has increased. The 1998 government white paper on energy policy clearly documents the government's policy of universal access to electricity and the provision of free basic electricity to indigent households in South Africa, alongside other free basic services such as water, sanitation, and refuse removal. The research report by Ledger shows a sum of ₹435.04 per indigent household per month, totaling $54 billion for about 10 million indigent households. And 4 years after her last loss in presidential elections, Marine Le Pen is set to run for Rassemblement National, the successor to the party her father founded, the National Front. And according to a recent poll from Le Monde, 42% of those surveyed in a sondage said that her party represents a threat to democracy. Well, I don't see how they represent a threat to democracy. You may not like their democracy. You may not like the way they speak, but they're not a threat to democracy. Not in the least bit. In Washington State, Governor Jay Inslee has imposed the teaching of critical race theory for educators. Washington Governor Jay Inslee signed into law a bill that incorporates the doctrine of equity, cultural competency, and dismantling institutional racism into training for all K-12 educators across the state. Senate Bill 5044, which passed the state's legislature in April, school districts in Washington must use 1 of 3 professional learning days to specifically train all staff in the topics of cultural competency, diversity, equity, or inclusion. And critical race theory gains another foothold. A racist piece of garbage is being used to pollute the minds. Disabled Portland veteran says armed burn loot murder activist beat and hospitalized him. A disabled war veteran in Portland said he was hospitalized for serious injuries after a group of BLM agitators attacked and beat him last week. John Hall, 53 years of age, said they allegedly armed with rifles surrounded his car when he exited his work truck. Hall said he was driving through the area after finishing a job to his next one, and the crowd stopped his work truck as they blocked the road, a common tactic used by the Marxist thugs. All of a sudden, these agitators came out screaming, pounding on my truck, adding that when he tried to drive around the group, he stopped because he thought he hit something with his vehicle. By this time, I've got 5 people surrounding my vehicle, AR-15s, AK-47s. Hall, who served in the Marine Corps and Army, recalled, I pulled out my .38 out of my right pocket and pointed it at the ground and told them, if a weapon points at me again, I will shoot to eliminate the threat. Hall said that someone then tackled him, grabbed his pistol before the group started kicking him and hitting him, according to the station. Describing his injuries, the veteran said he suffered a partially collapsed left lung, along with broken ribs, a broken collarbone, head trauma, and spinal injuries. It looked as if he was face down and the people were kneeling on top of him. Oh, really? Social media footage from last week showed them attacking him. The Epic Times has contacted the Portland Police Bureau for comment. Hall, like many other Portland residents, said he's leaving for good. I'm done. I'm done working in Portland. I'm shutting my business down. I'm probably not going to be coming back. Several weeks ago, Maryland's leftist slimeball mayor, Ted Wheeler, asked the public to help identify agitators. They want to burn, Wheeler said in a video in late April. They want to bash like they did to the nonprofit Boys and Girls Club in Northeast. Well, Ted Wheeler, you are responsible for this because you allowed this lawlessness to occur last year. And unfortunately, the citizens and residents of that town are reaping the misery that you heaped upon them just a year ago. Well, folks, we are facing a workforce crisis. This according to Pennsylvania Representative Dawn Kiefer, who testified in the Pennsylvania legislature. Let's catch a little bit of that very quickly.
It's sad that we actually have to do this legislatively, but for anybody that's, you know, awake, even remotely, we have a workforce crisis. That's the crisis that we're enduring right now. In my small little town, intermittently, our local fast foods, our Wendy's, our McDonald's, the Dollar General, and Little Caesars are just closed, randomly just closed, and with signs on their windows, sorry, we don't have staff. So they don't have enough employees to keep the doors open. And those are just some of the part-time jobs. Some of them are full-time jobs. Some of them are offering $200 signing bonuses for a part-time job. Still can't find people. It's a crisis that we have. And as far as the timing, well, the businesses would love to have the luxury of timing. That would be a great resource for them to have. And as business owners, we are waiting. My husband is waiting 6 to 8 weeks to get parts, 6 to 8 weeks to get a job out of the door for things. So if you think that this is just a short-term thing, long-term, we are looking at supply chains across the board. So you're looking at your food supply, you're looking at mechanical supply, and it might not, you may think, oh, that's just a machine. Think about your air conditioning coming up. Think about general maintenance. And all of our contractors, they are extending their project deadline dates by 6 to 8 weeks because they don't have enough employees on the job. We have a workforce crisis. And if the system's going to be on, it should be a component of the system. Turn it on. They should be communicating right now that the waiver is about to expire so that people can go back to work. We have a workforce crisis. We need to act now. We can't afford the luxury of time. We've already had too much time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And that's Representative Pennsylvania Representative Dawn Kiefer, who was speaking in front of the legislature testifying committee about the crisis that's going on now with the government perverting the concept of work. Leftists gaining the upper hand, handing out money, giving people money, more money than they make working, undermining employers and undermining our economy, and then blaming the former president for the woes that we have when it's actually these leftists who are perpetuating this nonsense. Many people are finding it a more lucrative to simply sit at home and collect a paycheck, which, of course, is coming out of taxpayers' pockets and future generations of taxpayers as this is funded with debt borrowing. Representative Kiefer is spot on when she talks about this, although she didn't say it in the terms. In fact, the government is competing with the employment sector. Absolutely. And we've gone from seeing a member of Congress, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, talking foolishly about how the unemployment rate is a consequence of the fact that people have to work two and three jobs in the Trump economy, when in fact she's an idiot. She doesn't know what she's talking about. The reality is that the unemployment rate has nothing to do with the number of jobs available. It has everything to do with the size of the workforce, those available in the workforce. And of course, she doesn't know that, even though she has an economics degree from a prestigious Ivy League school. One wonders if they simply hand those things out or if she simply skipped that class. Who knows? But Representative Kiefer is correct in pointing out that we're facing a workforce crisis. And this is happening here in the U.S. It's already been the case in the Netherlands for four decades, the overgenerous welfare state in the Netherlands, where employers found it much easier to have someone declared disabled mentally or physically rather than fire them, led to over half the workforce in the Netherlands not even working, living off the dole. And that's a situation we're headed towards here in the United States, with the leftists gleefully, happily destroying our economy. People unable to get food, unable to get supplies, unable to order parts because people aren't manufacturing them, aren't producing them, aren't making them. It is incredibly frustrating for the most vibrant, largest, and most effective and efficient economy in the world to be undermined in this fashion. Meanwhile, in Cape Town, illegal shack dwellers who've set up an illegal informal community are demanding basic services. On Monday morning, about 100 people from the, Intlungu Nyasa Matio Nyombe movement marched to the provincial legislature with intention of handing over their demands for basic services to Alan Windey, the premier of the Western Cape. Windey wasn't available, but the group vowed to return. All we need is water, proper sanitation, electricity. This isn't the first time we made these demands to the city. Last year, we went to the civic center with the same demands, but we were arrested and shot at, says Tembeni Kani. When IYM went to the Civic Center in November, community members were arrested, and a wheelchair user was tipped out of his wheelchair by a police officer while another police officer stood by watching. Well, the conduct of the police was unnecessary and arguably reprehensible in that respect, tipping over the wheelchair protester. Detaining or arresting would have been appropriate, tipping over. But when you illegally occupy land that doesn't belong to you and you build an informal settlement and then you demand that people provide you with services, it's beyond ridiculous. Beyond ridiculous. This is insane. Now, the African National Congress has promised to deliver free electricity and housing and water and sanitation to all poor South Africans. It's failed in that respect. It's had many successes, but it has not had many successes in the last decade, and it's failing. But people simply occupying a piece of land, putting a shack up, and demanding someone run cable and sewage and water to that is insane. There's a reason why much land is vacant. It's not ideal for those services, not capable for those services. And one has to wonder just what kind of planet these people live on when they think they can just build something on someone's land and demand that people provide them service. Return to where you came from. And if you were in a legal location there, a legitimate location there, and there are no services, then you have a legitimate argument. But to occupy land illegally, and the place we're talking about is a place that is swampy and dangerous and is far from ideal for people to live in human habitation, but they live there just the same. And in Namibia, South African musicians arrested for fraudulent COVID certificates. Yep, you knew it was going to happen. It's been happening all over the world. But South African artists were detained at Walvis Bay. Three South African artists were detained and were denied entry into Namibia at Walvis Bay on Friday night for allegedly faking COVID-19 results. They disembarked from a flight from Joburg with allegedly falsified tests. That was Obakeng Kakaba, given Aike ID and Johannes Lechodi. They were refused entry through Immigration Department. The trio were expected to perform live shows in Windhoek and Walvis Bay. According to the Erongo Regional Commander for Community Affairs, Inspector Ileni Shapumba, health officials of the port entry ports are trained to detect faked results. Apparently, they succeeded. He said genuine swabs were then taken of three men. The COVID results came out negative. They'll fly back to South Africa today, but it must be understood that a criminal offense punishable by law to present falsified documents to authorities. So none of them had COVID, and they were denied entry because they were required to have a COVID test. Overzealous states. But they do have a right to control entry into the country. They are a sovereign state. But seriously? Meanwhile, the border between Zambia and Botswana, which is also the corner where Zimbabwe comes up to, the Kazangula Bridge is finally completed, ladies and gentlemen. Finally completed. Waited for over a decade for this to happen. Up until now, people have only been able to cross the Chobe River by ferry. A time-consuming event that leads to all sorts of social ills and problems with truck drivers backed up for days trying to transport long-distance goods between Central Africa and Southern Africa, stuck at the Kazangula border, waiting for ferries to take them across. And it leads to all sorts of things. It also helped propagate the HIV virus, with prostitution being rampant amongst truck drivers there, and social ills, idleness, the cost of goods greatly increased. Finally, after such a long period of time, the Kazangula Bridge is complete, thankfully, and we shall see what happens now. Zambia and Botswana Monday launched a bridge that links two countries, with Zambian President Edgar Lungu commending China and other cooperating partners for financing the project. 923-meter-long Kazangula Bridge has been described as a game-changer in promoting trade not only between the two countries, but the entire Southern African region. The $260 million U.S. bridge comprises a bridge across the Zambezi River, and one border post of the two countries' sides. It started construction back in 2014. Lungu commissioned the bridge on the Zambian side, said the project would not have become a reality without the support of China, Japan, South Korea, and the African Development Bank. But he singled out China, of course. And the money came from the African Development Bank, not China. Construction bridge said will improve traffic transit due to reduced border transit time, as well as improved trade facilitation measures and border management operations due to the inclusion of one border post. Lower the cost of doing business and result in increased trade and competitiveness. Indeed, it will. President Eric Masisi opened the border post on the Botswana side. And this is reported from China News. So we can't find this anywhere else. Surprising. It's a major development for trade in Southern Africa. It's surprising that it's not carried by other news services. I had to look long and hard for that. I've been waiting to find out when, in fact, the bridge was going to be open, and now it's open. This is something that has been awaited for decades. People have been talking about a bridge across the river for decades. This will dramatically enhance the volume of trade and prove to be a huge benefit for the entire region. Long overdue. We should see the queues diminish greatly at the border. Although if trade increases markedly, perhaps the queues will return. But whatever the case is, the transit time from Zambia to Botswana will be dramatically reduced, as people no longer have to queue up, load onto the ferry, secure the vehicles on the ferry, cross the river slowly, disembark, and then vice versa. So this should be a dramatic impact. Meanwhile, tensions between Morocco and Germany are increasing after Germany continues to Berlin needles Rabat over Western Sahara. And a number of other issues, but Western Sahara is the thorn that's causing the problems. Rabat appears to have three main issues with Germany, but the most pressing appears to be control of the Western Sahara. Berlin is hoping for a quick resumption of bilateral relations in the interest of both countries. This week, the ongoing tensions between Morocco and Germany reached a new level after Morocco took exception to Berlin's stance on its claims to the Western Sahara. Last Thursday, the Moroccan Foreign Ministry recalled their ambassador, Zohor Alouni, and published a list of allegations against the German government. This kind of pressure is unprecedented, Dr. Maria Joshua, research fellow at German Institute for Global and Area Studies in Hamburg, told Deutsche Welle on the phone. After months of growing tensions, which led to the freezing relations between the German embassy in Rabat in March, the Moroccan Foreign Ministry has now, much to Berlin's surprise, concluded that Germany has been exacerbating hostile acts that are detrimental to the higher interests of the Kingdom of Morocco. From Berlin's point of view, there is no basis for these allegations, says Maria Abdebar, spokesman for the German Foreign Ministry. While Rabat appears to have three main issues, the most pressing appears to be control of Western Sahara. The two other points of criticism include dismay that Morocco hadn't been invited to a conference on Libya in Berlin, and that Germany hasn't tried to silence or expel Duisburg-based Moroccan social media activist Mohamed Hajib. Now, famously, last year, President Trump recognized Morocco's sovereignty over Western Sahara as part of a deal to get Morocco to resume diplomatic relations with Israel. Another diplomatic coup for the Trump administration. Of course, this is being portrayed in other quarters as a disaster. Well, the reality is this. Who's going to resolve the Western Sahara issue? The United Nations? Algeria? The African Union? The Arab Maghreb Union? Please, it's moribund. No one's going to resolve this issue. So the reality is the Sahrawi will remain in their camps in southern Algeria, and Morocco will continue to administer and control Western Sahara. So the de facto recognition of it really has little impact. It's just political. And this has got the left losing their minds, and the leftists in Berlin are angry about it. And instead of sticking their nose into Morocco's affairs, they're getting the results that were easily predictable. Morocco takes Western Sahara very seriously, and Berlin pokes them at their own risk. Well, folks, that's the news and analysis from today, the 10th of May, 2021. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll open up the stream here shortly for everyone else. Appreciate your patronage, and thanks for watching with us today.